Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will sit down with Dr. Kenny Burdine, Extension Specialist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How are you, Jay?
I am doing good, Vicki. How about you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm doing
good.
Very well. I'm not even going to complain.
Wouldn't do any good.
Nobody wants to hear it.
You say that like you complain a lot, and really you don't. You're not a big complainer.
I'm not. I try really hard not to complain because really nobody does really want to hear it. That's what I tell my kids, I would tell my dad. I'd say to Dad, when somebody says, how are you doing or how are you feeling, they're really just being nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just tell them, I'm hanging in there.
Had a pesticide training earlier today, and a couple walked in, producers here, man and his wife, and I looked at her and I said, how are you doing today? And she said, do you really want to know? She said, because I don't think you do. She said, I think you're just being nice. I said, I'll retract that.
Absolutely.
So, well, got a guest with us today. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. Good to be with you all again.
All right. As David's referred to him before, retreads, somebody we have to pull out of the recycling bin and run back through, you know, try to get a few more miles out of.
Good enough.
You've made the list of the ones that's been on the podcast twice.
Twice, that's right.
Nice. Yeah. Good company, I hope.
Yeah, another ag economist. Yeah. But you're actually our favorite. We'll have to go with that.
I hope he's listening, man.
I do too. I'm gonna be sure to text him and tell him to listen if he hadn't listened.
He being Dr. Jordan Shockley. Of course, there's all kinds of other ag economists out there. Happen to be the only two that have made it on here twice. Yeah.
Well, no, Greg was on here, so it's three.
I meant made it twice.
He's just not a retread yet.
That's right. He's not hadn't been retreaded.
We do need to get Greg back on again sometime. Yep, we've talked with him in the past about bale grazing, and that's been a popular subject after we've had a year like this past year when we looked at different input prices and the need maybe to spread some of those inputs around behind our beef herd. That's certainly something we could accomplish with bale grazing. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And the 75-degree days we're having in February is very uncommon, you know, and the rain is a little more common, which we're all getting rain, not just Vicki now. And, you know, so it's been a different kind of winter. I mean, you know, we've had some, if you don't like Kentucky weather, just hang around a minute. It'll change quick.
We've had a few cold spells, hard freezes that we've experienced all across the state. But for the most part, it's been a fairly mild winter, not terribly cold all the time.
And when it, I know tomorrow, of course, the temperature is going to drop tonight, be cooler tomorrow, but then, you know, it warms right back up, so.
Oh, absolutely. And, Kenny, I know you're working on some programs across the state and doing some things, but talk with us a little bit about the new Stocker Backgrounder program that y'all have. You've done it a couple of times, or you will have by the time this program airs. Talk with us a little bit about some of the things that y'all offered during that program.
Sure. We're excited about it. So it really started, you all, I think we're all three in this office, actually, when we did kind of that cow-calf profitability conference back in, that was January of 2020. So right before COVID, I guess.
Right.
And
we
kind of had the idea of having something patterned after that, but focused on the economics of backgrounding and stocker operations. So focused on margin operations. And did one in Bowling Green back in the fall, and going to be in Lexington on, I guess, Friday. So Friday last week, I should say. Sorry, forgot about that. But going to be in Columbia Tuesday, and then actually be in Elizabethtown, be the closest kind of to your main listening area on Wednesday. Looking forward to that. But I'm working with Gray Hallich and Jonathan Shepherd on them. They're great partners, and we've kind of put this together. It's really not so much market-focused. We talk about the market a little bit, but we really focus more on management of these backgrounding and stocker operations. So, Greg talks about things like, you know, comparing cost gain and value gain and, you know, using that to think about, okay, how heavy do I want to take cattle if I'm in a growing-type program? He talks about, you know, using the market to forecast prices and then work through budgeting scenarios. Jonathan does a really good topic talking about kind of the financial and tax management pieces that they apply, you know, mostly to margin operations, but a lot of what he says applies actually across the board to farming in general. Mm-hmm. And then I cover some things that I've never really done before in an extension setting, but focus on some, I don't want to call it, some more nuts and bolts marketing concepts. So we talk about shrink and talk about price slides and talk about selling cattle off the farm and talk about mm-hmm. price discovery. And then I wrap up, I do talk about livestock risk protection insurance, which I think is important for any margin operator sure. to for him or her to at least understand, you know, what are some of the tools they've got to manage price risk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something we'll get in, maybe dive into a little deeper here in a little bit, but you know, I think though this is a kind of a unique meeting to me because I don't think, best of my knowledge, we hadn't really offered anything like that ever. You know, diving into some of those marketing aspects and you know, talk about shrink and talk about, you know, price discovery and those kind of things, you know, and selling off a farm. A lot of people don't know how to do that and not get skint because those folks that are buying those cattle, they know how to skin you. Or they can skin you if you don't know what you're doing. So it's good to have that kind of an educational meeting coming up.
It's been fun. You know, when you do what I do, you always enjoy getting to tackle something different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do a lot of programs that we cover different aspects of you know, backgrounding stocker operations. So last week we had Mid-South Stocker Conference there in Bowling Green. I mean, it was a fantastic mm-hmm. program. You know, but this one is unique in that it's all focused on economics and marketing. So that's kind of fun and something new for us to try. I've been pleased so far. So,
yeah. Oh, go ahead. No. It sounds like too the program it's not just for the advanced producer or the beginning producer. It sounds like that wherever you are in there, that you're gonna take a lot of good information away from that you're gonna be able to use that and implement that on your farm. And you know, some programs that we do are maybe more advanced and you target that group, or you may do something, you know, that's more toward the beginners. But this one, you know, let's do you explain it, I think that's a program that sounds like be open to anybody that could walk away and take a lot of good information away with them.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot on at the Mid-South Stocker Conference, a lot of that's we're tackling management issues and things that we need to be trying to do from a grazing standpoint or a feeding standpoint and those kind of things, or a health standpoint even. But, you know, to tackle those economics, I think it's a tough issue. A lot of people don't like to talk about it, but I think, you know, people that have come will really learn something from that for sure.
You know, one of the things that I like, you know, from the outside looking in at a program like this, and we're the three of us as agents, we're out here in grain country, the grain production part of the state, and we've seen the evolution in grain marketing with our producers from going beyond just settling a load of grain to actually having a marketing strategy and a marketing plan. I think, you know, looking at this program, looking at the agenda, that's kind of what this is it's putting together that idea for our beef producers that marketing your livestock is not just taking them to the sale barn, that there's a strategy that goes along throughout the year that you should be implementing at different times of the year. So all about managing risk and maybe playing that position that you're going to play at the end of the year when you're selling your crop.
Sure. I think, too, and Kenny, you can talk about this a little bit, and you know, when we talk about stocker operators or backgrounders, you know, we don't necessarily think about the cow-calf guys, but there is a lot of times where there's a period of time, whether it be 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, that those cow-calf guys kind of turn into backgrounders and try to capture some of that money that they may be losing if they sell them right off the cow. And some of these concepts that y'all are going to talk about, I think, will be very, very valuable to them as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's always a fine line, but, you know, when I think about a background or stocker operation, I'm thinking about someone that's bringing in or buying usually wean calves or light calves and then putting weight on them for a period of time. And, of course, you know, we've got an entire sector of the ag industry that's kind of based around doing just that. And, you know, anytime you run a budget for someone like that, you value the calf coming in, and you've got death loss, health expenses, marketing cost. But in reality, if those are calves that you produced yourself, you know, what I always say is, well, you're going to sell them anyway, right? So some of those costs you're only going to pay once anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they're your own calves, they're going to be less stressed. You're not likely to lose as many. You know, health costs should be lower. So in reality, if you're a cow-calf operator, you know, you've got a real opportunity, I think, to add value to calves that you produce yourself, you know, and be in almost a better position than somebody that's buying calves off the market. So it fits, I think, regardless. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you're listening and you're a cow-calf guy and you do a little backgrounding or interested in starting to do a little backgrounding, I think this would be a great meeting for you. It's coming up in E-Town, March the 1st. What time does it start, Kenny? Do you know for sure?
I believe that one starts at 9. They're pretty long days. They're about 4 or 5 hours of actual content. So we'll be there from like 9 to 3, I think, with lunch in the middle. They're fairly intense.
Well, if you're in Kentucky and you want to go to that, get a hold of Matt Adams there in E-Town, or get a hold of your county agent and let them get you registered or get whatever they need to do. But, you know, we certainly want to invite you to come on out to that, because I think it'll be something that is well worth your time to take and come up there and go to that meeting.
And I think, too, did I hear you say that program was – either funded or partly funded by the Ag Development Board? Is that a program that's from that? Those in Kentucky know about this, the Ag Development Board, but we do appreciate those folks and the funds that they have given to across the state of Kentucky to allow a lot of educational programs that we do, and not only that, to help a lot of the farms and a lot of improvements have been made, you know, across the state with those funds. So
we always talk about, Kenny, how we're doing a show and it always gives us an idea while we're recording of something else to do. We probably should do a show someday about the Ag Development Funds and explain to folks just what those are, because Kentucky Department of Agriculture operates what we call the Kentucky Ag Development Fund. There's a board of volunteers from across the state that help administer funds that actually they're not tax dollars, but they're actually monies that were received by the state from the master settlement agreement with the tobacco companies back in the late 1990s. Great programs. We've done a lot of good across the state with them. Not tax dollar funded. I think that's the key that a lot of folks need
exactly
to remember,
right.
is these were funds that come in that, quite honestly, a lot of other states that got those funds used them to shore up their budgets with. Mm-hmm. Kentucky didn't do that. We had visionaries that looked into the future and said, we can use this money to change the way we do things in the state, and mm-hmm. I think they certainly have.
Yeah, I do too.
And I will say, too, that when all of that plan was coming together and when this was before it rolled out, you know, back, education was something that was very important, and that was a big piece of the pie, so to speak, on these programs. And you know, is of course we're all in the education business, that's what we do in extension, but you know, like we've said before, education is the key, and I appreciate the fact that they saw that as a priority as well.
Yeah. Kenny, aren't you on the board?
I'm on the Ag Finance Board. So
finance. I knew it was one of the two, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, what Jay was referring to was Ag Development Board, but I'm on the Ag Finance Board, which is, you know, another, it also spun from that same money, and it's a low-interest loan fund that
Kentucky
we used to.
Ag Finance Corporation.
Exactly.
Actually, it's been around since the mid-'80s, 1985, I believe, but there never was any real money to do anything until the Master Settlement Agreement, and that has funded investments all across the state.
Absolutely.
That have just been unreal for the development of agriculture during this time.
Yeah. Kenny, what kind of projects do y'all look for when you're looking to fund projects? And, I mean, I don't want you to call any projects out, but, I mean, what kind of projects do y'all look to fund or try to help with?
So we make loans for a wide range of things. We have an infrastructure program that covers a lot of things. And, of course, what we're most known for is the Beginning Farmer Loan Program. But, you know, partly to answer your question, it's not like we go out and look for projects. So this predates me in a lot of ways, but the idea behind the board, or you know, the corporation, was we didn't want to compete with traditional ag lenders, so it's a partnership loan. Mm-hmm. So in most all cases, we're working with an existing ag lender, and we're sharing in the loan, and then you know our money goes in at a lower rate, and then you know that lender gets some to service our portion of that loan, and then we take second position on that loan. So, you know, from the producer's perspective, you know, two things happen. One, they get a lower rate because of our money that goes in at a lower rate. So that's, you know, the blended rate's lower. But then, you know, by us taking second position on the loan, it allows those partnering lenders, you know, to make loans they probably couldn't make otherwise. Sure. And I think that's sure. what I think is the other advantage that probably doesn't get talked about as much.
I think a lot of the projects that I was involved with throughout the years through Ag Finance, I think of young farmers, sure. I think of new farmers, mm-hmm. Even programs that allowed, you know, the purchase of farms. It took some of that risk off of that local lender partner. When you look at new investors or new buyers, new farmers, there's a little more risk there than there is with somebody that's been established in the business for a while. So it's been a great thing to help bring people back to the farm as well.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of younger people that took advantage of the Beginning Farmer Program there in McLean County to help build chicken houses. Mm-hmm. And that has helped them come back to the farm and be able to be back on the farm, about having that steady flow of income to back on the farm, and has allowed them to be there. So it's been a really good program for a lot of years.
Yes, sure.
Kenny mentioned the infrastructure program. I'm the same way. I could ride down the road and point to a lot of different farmsteads that had a lot of growth and a lot of development to help augment whatever business they were already in. Chicken houses is certainly one. Tobacco barns, I think of, is certainly one. Hay storage structures, lots of things.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Kenny, I know before we get off of the something that y'all are going to talk about at the Stocker and Backgrounder Conference, LRP insurance. Talk with us a little bit, because, you know, there may be some people out here that are listening to us that don't know a lot about livestock risk protection insurance. And kind of explain to us about it and you know, kind of how it works and all the nuts and bolts of it.
Sure. Be glad to. So livestock risk protection insurance, commonly called LRP, it's really not new. It's been around for a while, but they've made it a lot more attractive since 2020. And, you know, there's a couple of things they've done, but, you know, most recently they've increased the subsidy quite a bit. So it's a cheaper it's cheaper than it would cost to go out and buy it otherwise due to the subsidy. So it's a pretty affordable way to get some price risk protection. Something else they did here recently is, you know, if you have, you know, your premium isn't due until the end of the period. So in other words, you know, in the past you had to pay that up front, which was a problem at times for folks, but now you do it after the fact. So, you know, oftentimes the cattle are sold and then the premium's due. So that's handy. But, you know, kind of a simple overview of it, it's an index insurance product, and it's paid based on changes in the CME feeder cattle index. And that's a big phrase, I guess, but but just kind of breaking it down.
Oh, is that all?
the CME index is the weighted average of feeder cattle prices in 12 major cattle producing states between 700 and 900 pounds. So just think about an 800-pound medium and large frame number one steer in kind of that area, think from Texas up to the Dakotas, you know, those 12 states. So it really is, the CME index is based on actual feeder cattle sales. And I think a lot of folks don't always think about that, but in reality, it really is actual cattle sales. Mm-hmm. And it's the same index that's used to cash settle feeder cattle futures. So it all links back. And you're buying essentially a product that pays you if that index falls below a level that you choose on an ending date. So let's just say, for illustration, David, that I had cattle that I was going to sell in August. And let's just say that, you know, maybe based on the August board, that CME index is expected to be around, let's just say, $2 a pound, okay? And then maybe I buy a coverage level at $1.96. So what that means is, if on the end date of my policy in August, that CME index is below $1.96, I'm going to get, you know, dollar for dollar compensation for that difference on every pound that I cover. Mm-hmm. So it's nice in the sense that you can use that to kind of set a price floor on your cattle. But on the same note, it's also attractive because, unlike, you know, maybe, you know, selling the board or something on futures, I don't have to worry about margin call or anything like that. So effectively, I set a price floor, but I've still got the ability to benefit in a rising market. So I set a floor but not a ceiling. And I think that's attractive to a lot of folks.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's probably the most attractive thing, because when you start talking about making margin calls, that's pretty scary for most folks. And, I mean, that's just,
sure.
You know, and if folks are listening to this maybe for the first time and hearing about it for the first time, it's a lot like crop insurance. Works a lot the same way, kind of, really. But, you know, you're just – what you're doing basically is setting a floor on your cattle. you know, to be sold. And I think it's like you can go out to, what, 8 months? Like 3 to 8 months in that ballpark, or how's that?
Yeah, so the minimum amount of time is 13 weeks. And then from there, it's every 4 weeks you can get an ending date. The availability is actually based on, you know, futures and options trades. So it changes a little bit. But, you know, usually anywhere from that 13-week to maybe about 6 months, you can find opportunity. In theory, you can go out even further than that. But you know, the options markets tend to get pretty thin the further out you get, so you don't have as much availability of the CME. The insurance product.
Right.
What I tell folks is, you know, just if you want to go that route, you know, you treat that premium like a cost of production. That goes into your budget. That's a cost. And then best case scenario is the market holds strong, it does well, and you sell the cattle in a strong market and you look back and, well, I didn't need it, but I'm glad I had it.
Right.
So it's much like, you know, car insurance or homeowners insurance or something. You don't really want to collect on it, but it's there.
Right. Right.
And it causes you to think, how much risk can you handle? You know, because that's going to be the deciding factor in a lot of cases. That's the deciding factor. How much risk can I handle? You know, and so a lot of people don't want to think of that, and none of us want to. But like you said, none of us really want to pay out on any of the insurance that we pay for. But we're sure glad we have it when we need it.
Yeah, we fuss about the premiums all the time, but if something bad happens, and this is the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a catastrophic kind of deal. If something really, really bad happens, you know, then this is going to help you get through, you know, and you know, hopefully cover all your expenses and at least, you know, break even or make just a little bit. But, you know, hopefully that's what that's there for.
You know, I think one of the unique things about this product, if I've understood it right all this time, being index based, the prices would be a lot more current to the year at hand versus maybe if you compare to crop insurance and you're using historical yields, maybe you're going to be a lot more to the point as far as the comparing that risk. It's going to be a lot closer to the risk that you're incurring at the time.
Yeah, I guess the way I would frame it is it allows you an opportunity to take advantage of the expectations of the market. So, you know, that is the CME index is what is used to settle, you know, feeder cattle futures. So what that means is if the expectation is for a good market in August, you know, through either futures or in this case through LRP, I can take advantage of that expectation of a strong market for August. And the other thing that I guess we haven't talked about that's really important and why it was so attractive to me early on is that it's scalable. You know, if we're talking about futures and options, I'm locked in. I've got a deal in 50,000-pound quantities because that's right. What the contracts are, right?
Pots,
right.
Yeah, truck loads.
But, you know, there's really not a minimum on LRB insurance. You know, I can cover 20 head, 30 head. I can mix it up and cover, you know, different groups at different coverage levels. So it gives you some flexibility in that sense that I think is nice. But just being able to cover small quantities is nice because most folks in Kentucky aren't moving truckloads feeder cattle, and that's right, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's one of the interesting things at the Stocker Conference that I learned was that, you know, this one person was asking the question, you know, well, if I get 300 head in or whatever, and he sells truckloads of cattle, and he said, you know, can I cover each one of them at a different price level or a different, you know, at a different time? And you said, well, absolutely. You know, that's the way. So, to me, how flexible that is to me is one of the big advantages of that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is this something that you're seeing, or I guess more producers starting to use this and starting to buy into this and starting to put this as part of their operation? Kind of like early on when, you know, we keep referring to crop insurance, but early on you just had a few that was, you know, they had crop insurance, but a lot of your producers still didn't. And now, of course, you know, I don't know that any, you know, grain producers hardly that don't have it, but do you kind of see that same thing with the livestock market too?
It's picked up a lot, Vicki. When the product first came out, the premium subsidy was 13%, which is something, right? But now, depending on the coverage level, it's either 35%, 45%, or 55%. Now, most folks that I work with are going to buy high enough coverage, they're going to get the lower subsidy rate. But even 35%, you know, what that really means is, the math behind it, you know, you're going to pay about 65 cents on the dollar of what a comparable put option would cost. so it's cheaper. And then by adding the timing difference on when premium is due, it's gotten a lot more attractive. And you're seeing more producers use it, and you're also seeing more insurance folks out there pushing it, right? And sure. Those two things go hand in hand. So I've not looked at those numbers from RMA in a while, but they were growing a lot when I looked last time last year, and I suspect it's just going to keep on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another the other good thing about this product is that if you're a cow-calf person, you can actually take that coverage on your calves that you're going to sell. If you're you calve in February and you're going to sell them in November, you can actually take coverage on them if you kind of know what to expect as far as weight wise. And that's what they do, they cover pounds, right?
It's pounds, yeah.
Yeah. So you can as a cow calf producer, you can also do those, you know, take that insurance on your calves as well. So it's just not limited to stocker folks or backgrounding folks.
And that's a good reason to make sure you have good production records so you know about how many pounds you can expect to have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Vicki, you couldn't have said it any better right then, and I'm going to jump in on that. So, you know, everybody knows that Vicki is the best ag agent in Kentucky. I mean, it's been a big joke here the whole time. But, I mean, Vicki's right. I mean, if we use our production records and keep production records and keep all that information, you have a easier job predicting where you're going to be at the same time next year. It's going to fluctuate a little bit depending on the grass and how much rain we get, you know, and that kind of thing. But Vicki's exactly right. So I couldn't have said any better.
No, nothing else left to
no,
say.
No, there's really not anything else left to say.
Thanks, well, I'm glad I'm here today. Yes. That's right. Yeah, you're welcome. So,
but
don't drop these mics.
Drop the mic.
Hard enough trouble keeping them working.
That's right. I was going to say, don't drop the mic, Vicki, because we've had some trouble. But anyway, but Kenny, talk with us a little bit. I know you're going to Vicki's County tonight. Talk a little bit about marketing. Talk with us kind of where we're at on the markets and how things are looking.
Sure. Well, I'm looking forward to being in Dixon tonight for sure. We've not been there in a while, so looking forward to heading out to God's country, right?
That's so. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Anyway. Unless you're looking for Hall's Cherry Cough Drops.
There's not any in Dixon.
Well,
Providence.
There is in Providence.
So, you know, from a supply perspective, the cattle market really could not look much better. Our calf market's already starting to run. Just, you know, looking at calf prices right now versus where they were end of 2022, we're probably up 15, 20 cents a pound, you know, on like, you know, the kind of that 400 to 600 pound calf weight range. And I just don't think we're done yet. I think we got a lot of room to run here between now and grass. Supplies are tight. You know, USDA released their inventory numbers end of January, so we're, I guess, about 3 weeks post that now when we're recording this. But, you know, the cow herd at the U.S. level was 4% lower than it was last year when you adjust for the adjustment in 2022. So supplies are tighter. We're going to see probably a 5 or 6% reduction in beef production this year. So bottom line is, I mean, we're in the driver's seat in terms of supply. You know, as I kind of look at, you know, where things are in terms of futures markets right now, I've got a fall board when we're recording this, you know, 210 to 215. When you start thinking about stock operators, they're going to be placing calves on grass here, you know, probably in April. Mm-hmm. They're looking at a fall board at 215 and a really strong expectation for fall price for those heavy feeders here in Kentucky. They're going to bid the price of these calves up quite a bit. So I think these calf markets can go up another 20 cents between, you know, between the end of February, kind of when we're recording this, and then where I think we'll be when grass really hits, which the earlier the better, obviously, but, you know, realistically, probably April. I think a lot of folks probably had to graze a little harder than they wanted to last fall due to the drought, so that may set back this pasture a bit this spring, we'll see.
Sure.
And, you know, our heavy feeder market should do the same. You know, if you look at the board, we're selling into a bull market. By that, I mean, you know, we use the word carry in grain markets a lot, which means, you know, it's essentially kind of a return to storage, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it on the feeder cattle side, I just think about, okay, how, you know, what's the futures market say about the likely direction of price going forward?
Mm-hmm.
And as you move through summer and into fall, prices just go up month after month.
Right.
So what that means is we should see higher feeder cattle prices throughout the year. And that should bode really well for these folks that are moving heavy feeders too. So we're due a good year by all means, but it should be the best year we've seen since fall 2014, spring 2015, my opinion.
Talk a little bit about, which I thought was real interesting at the Stalker Conference, the why of why the beef production is going to go down. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, we started reducing the size of this cow herd in 2019. In fact, so that was 4 years, I guess, January now. Mm-hmm. We've got 2.8 million fewer cows now than we did then, so about 9%. Pretty significant. In fact, this cow herd right now is smaller than it was in 14. It's actually about the same size in terms of just cow inventory that it was in 1962. But although we've been reducing the size of this cow herd since 19, we've still not seen a year-over-year reduction in beef production. And it really, the last couple of years, has been all about pulling females forward, right? You know, we've unfortunately had to cull a lot of cows last year. Combination of drought, high input prices, and high cull cow prices too, right? All three of those things kind of play together. And, you know, a lot of heifers that might have been held ordinarily ended up going into the system. So, you know, when your cow herd's decreasing and you're increasing beef production on heifer slaughter, right, you're really borrowing from the future for the present. That's what we've done. So 2023, that's going to catch up with us, and we're going to see a considerable reduction in beef production because, frankly, the females just are now out there. Calf crop's getting smaller, and even cattle on feed numbers finally have flipped now, and they're running quite a bit below where they were this time last year. So things really switched second half of 2022.
Yeah. And then, you know, when we're talking about prices for replacement females and all those, I mean, it's going to follow the feeder calf prices. I mean, I think they're just going to go up as well, don't you?
Agree completely. You know, we get really good price data on feeder cattle. It's harder to get good data on bred heifers and breeding stock. So I tend to watch for bred heifer prices. I tend to watch the special bred heifer sales. And so for that, it's probably the best market I've got for quality bred heifers. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if those were $400 or $500 higher per head in 2023 than they were in 2022. Mm-hmm. And it's just a function of those calf markets being so high. You know, they tend to follow them. In fact, sometimes almost too much, right? But no, you tend to see kind of the current value of calf prices get bit into that breeding stock pretty quickly. It's a little bit like what happens with land rents when crop prices go up. It's kind of the same idea in some ways.
Yeah. My banker would be glad for me to sell higher bred heifers.
It's probably a good year to sell bred heifers, would be my guess. So
I hope so. I've got a pile of them at the house that are going into the breeding program, so hopefully that'll work out. But you know, I just thought it was interesting on the beef production, you know, of the why it was had been rising and then now it's going to start tapering off. So I mean, I just thought that was real interesting the other day.
You know, the truth is too, because of what happened, there's not as many heifers out there. You take that and combine it with the fact that, you know, we've had rain here but the last few weeks, which we had more than we need for most of the state. But, you know, Southern Plains is still pretty dry. Northern Plains is still pretty dry. So the truth is, I don't think we can start to grow cow numbers in 2023. We're probably looking 2024, 2025. So I do think the odds are good that this tight supply stays with us for a while. And I don't think we'll see it turn as quickly as it did in 2015. That's Kenny's guess, but...
Yeah, I was going to ask you how long you think that'd be around, you know, if it was going to last 2 or 3 years or, you know, a year or what.
From a supply perspective, we should get, I think, three good years. Now, there's obviously these black swans we talk about that happen a lot more than you really see a black swan, right? But you know, there's always things that can impact that. But, you know, the tight supplies I don't think are going to change in the next 2 or 3 years.
So in the grain market or the grain folks, when prices go up, they want to produce more, you know, more if it's whatever the commodity. So now are we looking at livestock producers, beef producers, are they wanting to add more animals to the herd, or do you see people that may not even be in the cattle industry, you know, say, you know, hey, I've got this ground that I'm not doing anything with, maybe we should, you know, try to do something, try to get into the cattle business. Is that, do you see that happening when the cattle market's up?
You usually do. Now, in all fairness, remember, we're just getting there. You know, mm-hmm. it's early in this run.
Sure.
But sure, you'll definitely see interest in that. Now, in my opinion, we just don't have, even if, let's say that there was a lot of interest in expanding the cow herd in 2023. I just don't think the females are there right now, right? You know, we've most of them left last fall, right?
Yep.
And on the same note, although we may be, you know, we may have good forage conditions here, that doesn't mean they will in the southern plains, northern plains, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to constrain that quite a bit. But the answer to your question is sure, you know, that's what you tend to see. But because there's not as many heifers around and there's probably going to be some higher calf prices, that may be one of the reasons why I think we see this heifer market really run, right? Because you've got, you may have the demand there, but not quite the supply that you want ideally. The other thing I tell folks, and it's, cow-calf operations are always interesting, and people like me are part of the problem, because when I come to Dixon and talk to a meeting or talk to your folks this evening, Vicki, you know, I'll show a quick cow-calf budget, right? And it'll be kind of an annual budget. But in reality, every one of our breeding stock is a multi-year investment, right? You know, you're hoping to get 8, 10, 12 years out of a heifer you place in production in 2022 or 2023, right? So it's important, I think, that when we think about expansion, that we don't expand because the current calf market is strong, right? If you're going to grow the size of your herd, you got to think long term and say, okay, you know, can I be more profitable in a normal calf market? And that's, you know, that's what I think is important. You know, don't chase prices. Think long term.
Yeah, I think that's probably true with any enterprise that we have, that we don't need to be chasing those real quick short term.
Get rich quick. That's the I think right. That's the people. Some people try to chase those. Yeah. You know, I'm gonna when get I was rich
a,
quick.
Yeah, when I was a kid, my granddad used to say, "You can't get in and out. You got to get in and stay in, and you know, just suffer through the bad. Try to break even on the bad years, and capitalize on the really really good years.
And don't buy when they're the highest, right. And sell them when they're cheap. Because because that happens.
Yep. Happens a lot.
It happens a lot.
Now she's a marketing expert.
What can I say?
This is my opinion too, and I think it's important to think about it this way. But you know, we should see much better profitability in cow calf operations the next few years, right? But you know, there's other ways to invest in your operation besides increasing the size of your cow herd, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, there may be things that you can do, you know, that ultimately lower your production cost, and maybe you make more on the same number of cows as opposed to adding more cows, right? Because this is my bias, but I really feel like there's more operations in Kentucky that are overstocked than understocked. And I think that's something to kind of think about. You know, you can make more profit running fewer cows, because it comes down to how much you make per cow. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of folks, you want to take advantage of these good times to get yourself in position to be profitable long term. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. There's a lot of things we can do from a, you know, from a management standpoint, and investing in, whether that be facilities or you know, reseeding grass to, you know, to those kind of things that help you long term and not just in the short term.
Absolutely.
Working on your fertility too. I mean, we've talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
This, especially this past year, because, you know, we really wasn't sure what you needed was going to be there, and then the crazy prices that were there. We know that less fertilizer was spread on lots of acres, and
especially pastures.
Right. And so maybe taking the opportunity to get that soil test and really look at what you've got and really put the time and effort into starting to improve the fertility.
I'm hoping we see a lot of pastures get renovated, and now that we've got some moisture, not necessarily this spring, but hopefully this fall, it's a time for producers to take advantage of these input prices that have really come down a lot, and the availability is a lot better than it was last year too. So certainly this time, the soil test, if you didn't do it last year like you should have, this is the time to do it, and don't ride a second year without taking advantage of some of these nutrient prices.
Yeah, and Kenny was exactly right when he said we rode these pastures pretty hard last fall. And,
yes,
and,
sir.
And I, you know, from my personal experience, I mean, we're going to try to do something this spring to help, you know, and we're going actually going to plant a little bit of ryegrass. Somebody talked me out of planting spring oats yesterday. So we're going to plant some ryegrass, some Marshall ryegrass, and try to get some grazing early on to try to get through the spring. And then we've got a field or two that we're going to plant with sorghum sedan grass just because, you know, we're going to need some of that something for those cattle to eat, you know, this summer. So, you know, those are some things you can think about. And then we're going to come back and reseed next fall. I mean, that's just, we've got to get that done. If we don't have anything for cows to eat, boy, that hay is expensive. It's real expensive.
This is definitely the time of the year producers need to be looking at annuals to get them through this summer.
Yeah.
Before they can do some real renovations in the fall.
Oh yeah, and that's as Jay always says, we found another topic to have, but we could talk about hay costs and we could talk about you know, pasture renovation pretty quick. But you know, to me, feeding hay is probably the most expensive thing that you can do. You know, anytime that cow's grazing, she's not costing me near what she's costing me when she's eating hay.
Cost of stored feed. I've heard it my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And especially when it's not cut at the maturity that you want it to be cut at, too. So you've got a lot of people that's, I mean, and it can't be helped. I mean, I know. I mean, it's something that it's preaching to the choir, I guess. But
it's better than a snowball.
I've heard that my whole life too.
Sometimes that's not always true.
That's right.
That came up in a meeting. If it was, what year was it? It would have been the winter of 2007-08. So it was, you know, so you know, history lesson. We're talking spring, you know, spring freeze in 2007. You know, drought in summer of 2007. It was about as bad as it could have been. And I remember talking about, I can't remember the question exactly, but I think it was a question. The question came up something about cutting hay on CRP ground, which, you know,
knew
not
that's where you were going.
Yeah, and I remember I made a comment about, you know, that I didn't think it was a good idea. It didn't mm-hmm. wasn't worth it. And someone fired back about the snowball. And I remember I was younger then and had a little more fire. And I said something effective, well, our snowball selling for $150 a ton. But that, anyway, that's been a while.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, and I don't remember the exact numbers of the day, but I remember doing comparisons of what it cost somebody because the CRP hay wasn't free. You had to take that deduction in your payment to do that. And if you took that same money that you would have taken for that deduction and bought shelled corn, I mean, corn, I don't remember the prices, but corn was pretty cheap at that time.
Yeah, back then.
It was a much better option to take that money and buy corn than it would have been to take that deduction and roll the CRP hay.
You know, it was a whole other world at the time, but soy hulls were moving for, you know, 120 to 160 a ton.
Yeah, I remember you 150. Know? I remember that number.
And we were paying more than that on a ton basis for hay, right? And you know, with hay in a year like that, we were paying for convenience is what we were, mm-hmm. you know.
Rice hulls, I remember getting really, really high, and we quit seeing a lot of the poultry operations in Arkansas bed their houses with rice hulls, and they were moving to wood chips because of the rice hulls, because the feed situation was so expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's never a good thing. Never a good thing, so.
Everybody just looks at one another. What do we say now?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's the time of the show when we always think about a timely tip. Mm-hmm. We've got Dr. Kenny with us today. I don't know if you have a timely tip for this time of the year, but I think of so many things that folks could be doing in March to get ready for this spring season, mm-hmm. Especially if you're beef related. I know right now we've got a good idea of how many calves we've got on the ground. We hope we have a good idea how many we're going to wean a few months from now. Be thinking about this LRP and looking ahead and seeing how you could actually factor that into your livestock budget.
Yeah, I think it's a management tool, and I think that a lot of people can use it. So I think that's a great timely tip, Jay, and to use that LRP as a management tool to help you, you know, mitigate the risk of you know, low prices, high prices, whatever happens in the fall.
You know, David used the term risk there, and Vicki alluded to this earlier. Risk is different for everybody. So sit down with your consultant, sit down with your extension agent, get a hold of a specialist. Be thinking about what your risk level is that you're comfortable with, because it's going to be different for producers all across the gamut of production.
Yep. So. I agree with that 100%.
Anything you want to add to that?
No, but along those same lines, I will say this. You know, we're coming off a year when it was bad dry. Everything points to really high value gain right now, meaning that, you know, there's going to be a lot of incentive to add pounds to cattle in Kentucky, whether that be a cow-calf operator weaning calves himself or someone buying calves and you know, adding weight via stocker or backgrounding operation. But, you know, I guess I would say this. We are probably going to be in better forage shape than a lot of the country come spring. Mm-hmm. Now, there'll be exceptions.
Yeah.
But I guess I would just say take full advantage of those spring pastures. If you're a fall calf or weaning calves in the spring, I would really think about utilizing that. You know, we clip our pastures oftentimes in late spring, early summer, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of that growth, honestly, is about as cheap as it can get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of that because I really think the incentive is going to be to sell bigger cattle this year. As high as feed prices are, they don't want to place these light calves. They want to buy heavy feeders. Yeah. So think about that when you think about your spring pastures.
They're going to want to keep them in that feedlot as short a time as possible, and buying a little bit heavier animal going in will shorten that length of time because they pretty much have to be the same coming out on the backside.
More or less.
So.
$7 corn is pretty high. $15 beans makes pretty high soybean meal, too.
Tough to do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Tough to do. So, all right. We appreciate you for sitting down with us today on kind of short notice. You're on your way to Dixon tonight, so it wasn't totally out of your way. But it
worked out great. Good to see everybody.
Thank you for being here with us. And we want to thank our host for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners.